Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Missouri voters made it clear earlier this month that they do not like the health insurance exchanges required by the Affordable Care Act, called Obamacare. Voters decided that the exchanges, markets where eligible consumers could purchase affordable health insurance, could not be established here without legislative approval or a vote of the people. Many states oppose the concept. Several have no problem with it. Illinois, for instance, plans to move ahead and work with the government on setting up an exchange. Deadlines for making the decision have been adjusted, giving some states a chance to reconsider opposition. It all puts the situation into a certain degree of flux. So what happens now? Joining me to talk about it and answer your questions are Professor Sidney Watson of St. Louis University's Health Law Policy Center. Ryan Barker is Director of Health Policy for the Missouri Foundation for Health, which promotes equal access to quality health services. Thank you both so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thank you.
I think we better start at square one. It's hard to believe, but many people probably don't really know what these exchanges are. So, Sidney, let me start with you. You've done it before. Please do it again and tell us exactly what the exchanges are and would do.
Well, the exchanges are part of multiple strategies created by the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare, to make health insurance affordable for all Americans. Starting January 1, 2014, most people will continue to get their health insurance through their employer. But if their employer does not offer health insurance or it's not affordable through their employer, there will be new options available through these health insurance exchanges. And most of us will take advantage of those as online web marketplaces, a place we can go and compare apples to apples and oranges to oranges and pick a plan, have a guaranteed price, know what the coverage is, no fine print to confuse us, new accountability, new transparency, better competition, better prices, better choice.
Sounds pretty good.
It is. It's a great idea, actually. It's a health policy idea that has been around for a while. It's very difficult to shop for health insurance in the individual and small group market. Simply difficult to get the information, difficult to compare policies. So this is a marketplace solution to a market problem.
Okay, but Ryan, Missouri has decided it doesn't want to get into that business.
Yeah, and I think it's a very nuanced vote, and I don't know if the voters really understood more than what was on the proposition that they were reading. So Prop E does, it bans Missouri from setting up a state-based exchange unless the legislature votes for it or a vote of the people. And really it was to make sure our governor did not set up a state-based exchange by executive order. Our legislature really did not want him to do that.
I wonder, and this requires an opinion from either or both of you, if this was purely political in nature or was some really deep-seated opposition to it because they felt it wouldn't work, was just an attempt to undermine Obamacare.
I think it depends on who you talk to. I think there a lot of people are – it's just sort of political. I think there was some real fear among legislators, certain legislators, that the governor would do this without their input. We did see – I think it was New Jersey. One of the states did do an exchange by executive order. I don't think Governor Nixon was going to step out that far ahead and do that. But there was some real fear that he was going to do that, and they wanted to make sure they had their voice as part of the process.
Well, Sidney, what happens now in Missouri that this vote has been taken, Proposition E is passed?
Well, we will have a health insurance exchange. The Affordable Care Act provides that if we do not move forward and set up a state-based exchange, that the federal government will operate a health insurance exchange for us. They have begun that planning process. That's the Department of HHS. And we'll be getting some more rules and regulations and standards and know a bit more about what that looks like in the next few weeks.
Would it necessarily be different from a state-run exchange?
It's hard to know at this point. A number of states are moving ahead, setting up their own state-based exchanges. By being able to set up your exchange at the state level, you get to make a lot of choices about what it looks like, how the plans are listed on them. That if the federal government is operating the exchange, gets made at the federal level. But we really don't know what the crucial differences will be at this point.
So as I understand it, Ryan, we have the potential, states have the potential for a state-run exchange. There is the potential, as we're facing here in Missouri, to have a federal chain exchange. And then there is the possibility of a joint federal-state exchange. Why is that different, and how is it different from the others?
So originally in the Affordable Care Act, it seemed to lay out the two options of a state-based or a federally facilitated exchange. And then we have seen a lot of flexibility in the Obama administration with trying to implement the Affordable Care Act and trying to give states as many options as possible. And so a little over a year ago, we saw this option come out from the feds that said, you know what, we'll do a middle option, which is this partnership exchange, where the feds will take on certain of the responsibilities of setting up the health insurance exchange and running it, but maybe the state is really sophisticated at consumer engagement or different parts of what will involve in the exchange. And so the state could keep some functions and the federal government would come in and do some functions. So it's sort of that middle option.
Right. And I think it was also to encourage the states to get their feet wet, to take on one or two or three of the functions of the exchange, see how that worked, and then take on more responsibility if they want it.
The deadline for states advising the government as to whether or not they would participate was passed last week, except that it was extended for another month, just further complicating the situation. What does this mean?
Well, I think as Ryan has already said, it shows the flexibility at the federal level, trying to help the states move forward and make their choices. I think the federal government is clear that a number of states were waiting to see what would happen in the election before they made their final choices. This gives those states a little extra time to weigh their options. There's also been an extension of the deadline for states to give notice of whether they'd like to set up a partnership exchange. And that deadline is now set for mid-February.
But I did see last week that Governor Nixon did submit a letter to Secretary Sebelius saying that Missouri would not do a state-based exchange and sort of said because of Prop E, he's kicking this back to the legislature and saying, you know, it's sort of in their hands in Missouri. What do they want to do? But, you know, at this point, we will not have a state-based exchange.
But that was something he obviously was required to do because of Proposition E. Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
And his letter and these deadlines have to do with setting up a state-based exchange by January 1, 2014. The state may always come in later and set up its state exchange. There is no absolute drop-dead date. So I think we're likely to see many states, including maybe Missouri, sitting back comparing states that have their own exchanges with how the federal government sets up a federal exchange and then deciding how they want to go forward.
I think we'll see, yeah, exactly what Sydney said. States can change their mind every November whether they want to do federal, partnership, or state. And I think we'll see probably a 20-something states start out as a federal exchange, but I think eventually we'll see quite a few of those states transition to more of a state-based exchange. And I think we're seeing that play out in Missouri right now, where there are some policymakers that want nothing to do with Obamacare and don't want to, you know, they don't care, you know, if it's state-based or federal, let the feds deal with it. But we see some other policymakers that are, you know, that are more conservative saying, hey, states' rights. If we have to do this exchange, let's do a Missouri solution to it.
Well, and there are also a number of conservative governors around the country, and I don't have the number at my immediate command here, who seem to be reconsidering now that Sydney, as you've indicated, the election is over. It puts a whole new spin on the thing.
Yes, and I think Mississippi has probably been the poster child, a conservative Republican governor who early on said that for Mississippi he wanted a state-based exchange.
For all these deadlines that have been adjusted and readjusted, nothing can possibly happen here before the 9th of January, before the Missouri legislature goes back into action, and it's likely to assume that nothing is going to happen until they've had an opportunity to see what's going on some of these other places. Right?
Yes.
Right.
Yes, that's what Prop E does, is prohibit Governor Nixon from moving forward without that vote of the legislature.
And there really is there's a second part to Prop E, which I think is it's a little bit more, makes things more complicated. And the second part to Prop E was that it makes it illegal for state officials and state agencies to even work on, plan, think about exchanges. They're not allowed to help the federal government set up an exchange in Missouri unless the federal regs say they have to. And if any state workers do work on exchanges and they're not protected by these federal regs, anybody could sue them for doing that. So I think it's sort of put a freeze on a lot of the state departments. We have a lot of state workers that are, I think, really nervous about doing any work on exchanges unless the legislature does something to say, yep, you can do this.
But that doesn't prohibit them from looking at what other states are doing in the meantime and try to get a notion of what's going on.
Right. Neither does it prohibit them from cooperating with the federal government if required by federal law. Right. But it is an awkwardly phrased proposition that really invites frivolous lawsuits.
Well, that's something everybody wants to avoid. Lieutenant Governor Peter Kinder has been one of the champions against Obamacare. He says that it would cost the state of Missouri about $100 million a year to implement the exchanges. Does that sound like a correct figure to either of you? And why would it cost so much?
Well, it doesn't sound right to me, first because there are federal planning grants available to help with setting up the exchange. And then once the exchange is created, it becomes self-sustaining through charges on the insurance policies that are sold through them. So there's actually a funding mechanism that goes along with it, so we would not have to create new state revenue streams. So, we would not have to tax ourselves.
So, Ryan, the state is losing money by not opting in?
In a sense, because we're losing out on some federal planning grant money that would go – if we give it up, it's going to go somewhere. It's going to go to another state. So federal dollars are our tax dollars, and we're letting other states sort of take Missouri taxpayer dollars and use them to set up their own exchanges.
Now, I have another date here in my notes, and I'm not exactly sure what it means, but it means that Missouri – it says that Missouri has until 2015 it can come back again and get into this situation. Does that make sense to you, Ron?
Yeah, and so that's sort of what I was saying earlier, that states can change their mind every November and say, you know, we said we were going to do a federal, but now we want to do a state. And I think then what will happen is the feds will slowly transition it from federal control to state control.
So 2015 would not be a drop-dead date. This could be 2020 if, in fact, they wanted to wait that long. Okay, let's take a break. We'll do that now. My guests in studio are Professor Sidney Watson of St. Louis University. Ryan Barker is with us from the Missouri Foundation for Health. And we're talking about these insurance exchanges being set up, in some cases not being set up, under the Affordable Care Act, as you all know, I'm sure, because of the passage of Proposition E, Missouri has opted out of setting up a state exchange. It means the feds are going to come in and they'll do it for us. Back to continue our conversation. And, of course, we'd like to bring you into it if you have questions about the exchange. And or Obamacare. These are the guys to talk to. Come on in at 382-8255. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet, that is, on STL on Air. You can also reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our discussion about the health insurance exchanges that are being established through the Affordable Care Act, often referred to as Obamacare. My guests in studio are Sidney Watson of St. Louis University, St. Louis University's Health Law Policy Center. Ryan Barker, also with me in studio, Director of the Health Policy for the Missouri Foundation for Health. Sidney, how complicated is it to set up an exchange? It seems like it's enormously complicated.
Well, it is a challenge because most of us are going to experience it as this website, like going to an Expedia or going to a Kayak where you can see your choices and actually organize them by price or premium, whatever you want. And setting up that web portal requires that health information technology expertise. Also, behind the scenes, there's going to be a lot going on because one of the major reforms in Obamacare is effective 2014. all health insurance is going to be community rated. That means that we're no longer going to shut people out of health insurance because they have a pre-existing condition or charge people who have pre-existing conditions more. We will all pay the same. Part of what the exchange will do is behind the scenes move those premium dollars around so that insurance companies do not have an incentive to no longer sell policies to people who cost more.
Ryan, what will the role of insurance companies be in this whole process of setting up the exchanges?
So, I mean, we saw back in 2011 when there was an exchange bill in Missouri's legislature that the insurance companies were very interested in that. I think a lot of the insurance companies in Missouri, the big ones, are going to want to participate in this exchange. So while it is a government-regulated exchange, In the exchange, it's private health insurance. And so when people go in there, you know, they're shopping for private health insurance. And those insurance companies want to be part of this exchange. Some of the estimates I've seen are that 600,000 people, 800,000 people in Missouri may use these exchanges, our exchange. That's a lot of new customers for these insurance companies. They want to be part of this market.
And Sydney, will health insurance cost us less once these exchanges are established?
Well, according to the Congressional Budget Office, they did the figures when we passed the Affordable Care Act, and they said over 10 years it will cost the federal government less to implement this whole package of reforms than if we had done nothing. The Business Roundtable and the Commonwealth Fund reached the same conclusions when they looked at the cost of employer-sponsored health insurance and private health insurance.
And this insurance will be available to anyone who is not covered by their employer or through some group of some sort.
Right. Anyone who is not offered employer-sponsored insurance or for whom it's not affordable may go to the exchange and shop there as an individual. Small businesses may also use it. But I do stress that it's may. It's a voluntary marketplace. Anyone who wants to shop in a different way still will be able to do that.
We're talking about having health insurance for everyone. Will everyone be insured, in fact, under this new plan?
No, not everyone. You know, there will still be some people who, like Sydney just said, it's a may. You may choose to purchase insurance through the exchange, through your employer. There is now a penalty or a fine if you choose not to. So some people will just choose not to and pay the penalty. And that's what the Supreme Court decided this summer with the individual mandate was everybody has to have health insurance. The other large group that is left out will be undocumented immigrants. So they are banned from both Medicaid and the exchanges. My understanding is they can't even use their own money to purchase insurance in the exchange. So there will still be, I think the estimate is about 10 million people tied to their immigration status that will remain uninsured.
You know, on the other hand, Obamacare is modeled on the Massachusetts health reform. And there, the figures are 99% of children have health insurance now, 98% of adults.
The 10 million who will not be insured, the undocumented aliens, they could still go to the emergency room and still are required to be treated in the emergency room, as is the case now, correct?
Yes. And you know, that's one of the issues is that I think we heard from the president after his reelection that immigration is probably going to be an issue in the next 2 years, that we have to deal with it as a country. It impacts healthcare. It impacts a whole lot of other issues. We can't solve that from the healthcare perspective unless we solve the immigration problem.
And so we're going to wind up paying for this medical care for people in this category anyway, one way or another, are we not?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I think that also raises another issue moving forward that is related to the exchanges, and that's the Medicaid expansion. One of the important parts of the federal legislation is to expand Medicaid so it covers everyone up to 138% of poverty. That's about $15,000 for an individual, a family of three earning about $25,000. They will be eligible if Missouri decides to expand Medicaid, to go into the exchange and to get a Medicaid plan. But according to the Supreme Court, that is now the state's decision. If we do not expand Medicaid, we will be leaving uninsured in Missouri about 255,000 people.
Is there a dollar figure with regard to this, what it would cost the state?
To expand Medicaid?
Yeah.
For the first 3 years of the Medicaid expansion, it's completely paid for by the federal government. And then there's a slow phase in where the state has to pick up a share. But even by 2020, the state share for this expanded population is 10%. And the feds will pay 90% of that cost. So it's estimated over the first 6 years of Medicaid expansion, there would be about $8.4 billion in federal money and about $400 million in state dollars that needed to be put in over that six-year time period.
And if you put that into context, it costs the state about 1.7% more in Medicaid funding to expand Medicaid than to leave out 255,000 people.
And we have some good people right now, researchers, looking at are those actual costs, or is there, yes, we have to pay $400 million over the six-year period, but do we actually realize some savings in Medicaid so that this Medicaid expansion ends up maybe not costing the state anything because we realize savings in other areas of the Medicaid program?
Yeah, Ryan makes a really important point. I said an increase in Medicaid spending, but we're likely to save money in mental health spending, spending for corrections, spending for public health services that we now provide to people who are uninsured. Both Arkansas and Maryland, an increasing number of states are realizing that expanding Medicaid save state money over 10 years.
This has not been explained very well to the public, has it?
No, I think we're getting there. I mean, I think it's really complicated to look at, and I think nobody wants to jump out there and say something that we can't back up. As Sydney said, there are a couple states that have already put out reports that say this expansion is not going to cost anything over a 10-year period because of all the savings. But I think before we say that, we want to make sure it's true in Missouri, although many of us suspect it.
Let's bring the listeners into the conversation. RC in St. Louis has been waiting very patiently. RC, go ahead. You're on the air with Sydney and Ryan.
Hey, over the past 6 months, I've heard nothing but, the rhetoric from the Conservative Party and the Tea Party talking about how the implementation of the Affordable Health Care Act. And I call it the Affordable Health Care Act because I don't like Obamacare. I don't like the name because, it raises up, too much animosity. But I've heard that there will be an enormous tax hike in the year 2013.
I see. Go ahead.
I was trying to see if that were true. And also I wanted to say that hearing you all weigh in on this and my own research on the Affordable Health Care Act, it doesn't sound like socialism to me. It sounds more like an expanded capitalism. Like, it sounds more like you're trying to expand capitalism. You're trying to open up the market. You're trying to make the market freer. That's what it sounds like to me. It doesn't sound anything like any type of socialism or anything like that.
RC, thank you so much for the call. And by the way, I think we're all calling it Obamacare because Mr. Obama says that's okay with him. He kind of likes being associated with it. Now, it wasn't too many months ago, Sydney, though. We wouldn't dare use that phrase because it was considered pejorative.
Yes, but I think the president has indicated he's okay with the name, so I'm using both of them now. Right, yes. I go back and forth.
People certainly know what you're talking about when you bring it up. But what about RC's comments with regard to all of this?
On the second point, that this is – it's really interesting because, in a sense, you're right, that this is an expansion of private health insurance through these exchanges. Now, they are government regulated. And so there are two sides to this where you hear that out there that this is a government takeover of health insurance. Well, that rumor comes from the government. There are some more regulations, and a government entity, either the state or the federal government, will regulate these markets. But it is an expansion of private health insurance in those markets.
Yeah, it is very much a private solution using the government to create a fair marketplace, consumer protections. It's a good melding of regulations and competition.
Let's. Were there any questions left unanswered that RC raised?
Well, RC had also asked about, you know, whether there are going to be tax hikes in 2013.
Yes, exactly.
The only tax increases are going to be on very high income Medicare payments, and that's for individuals and families earning over $250,000 a year. We're going to apply the Medicare payroll tax to some dividend and investment income. So we're really talking both very high income folks and investment income, which it's really helpful to bring into that Medicare base. So it's really an example of using progressive income tax.
Well, much of the tax issue is yet to be written, because clearly when the lame duck session is through and we have a new Congress, they're going to have to deal with taxes, and they're talking about, we hear it every day. So that chapter yet to be written. Back to the phone, and we'll bring in Tina calling from University City. Tina, you've been very patient. We thank you for that.
Yeah, I was looking at the actual proposition, the way it was worded, and I don't see anything in it that would cause people to, you know, vote against it, and or rather vote for it, I guess, because it says, shall Missouri law be amended to prohibit the governor or any state agency from establishing or operating state-based health insurance? And, you know, my question is, I don't understand why Missourians, and I'm from Missouri, but why Missourians were so afraid of this, or did they just not understand it? And, or do we have a poor system in Missouri for informing our public or educating our public?
You know, I think it's a good question. I mean, I think some of us tried to get out some information before the election, but there wasn't a lot out there on Prop E, what it meant, what it did. And when you read it, I think some people read it and thought, well, it doesn't, you know, this prohibits the governor from doing it by himself, which, you know, a lot of people, I think, view that as, okay, well, that's okay, because we want input from more than just the governor. I think that's where we saw a lot of the yes votes for Prop E was, you know, we want input from all sides.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there was so little at stake with Prop E. It was just a question. The governor had said he wasn't going to move forward without legislative approval. So I don't think it was a proposition where you saw lots and lots of information being generated to educate the public.
Well, that's why I asked the question earlier about the politics of all of this, because particularly in a state like Missouri, which is very much a red state now, anything associated with Obamacare was absolutely toxic in the minds of many voters. And that's, it seems to me anyway, as an observer of all of this, that that's what was being voted on. It was the overall package.
Yeah, and I think there's a lot of people that view that as a sort of a referendum on Obamacare.
Exactly.
The same thing as Prop C back in 2010, that, you know, said Missouri won't force people to buy health insurance. A lot of people view that as sort of a referendum on the Affordable Care Act.
Let's return to the phones and bring in Zach, who is calling from Union, Missouri. Zach, thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Yeah, hi. I work at a small business. We employ like six people. I've been there about 5 years. I think our rates have gone up like at least six or seven times. We use a brokerage kind of system where we're constantly shopping around to try to find good deals. And I'm just wondering, is that even really reflective of what the healthcare costs are, the fact that the costs keep going up on our insurance, like, you know, multiple times a year even? Like, is that really reflective of what it actually costs, or the insurance companies just inflating their prices?
There's probably a lot going on if you've got six employees, because right now rates are set depending upon how healthy or how sick your employees are, how much health insurance they're using. That's why the market reforms that take effect in 2014 are going to be so important to you. The price will be locked in for a year. You will be guaranteed the same price that other small employers are paying. You'll be able to use the exchange to shop for plans and to compare plans, and your broker will be able to do that too. Plus, you're going to have tax credits to help cover the cost if you choose to offer employer-sponsored health insurance.
So this is, what you're speaking of is a small business with six employees. So we know that for large employers, health insurance still works pretty well. And we know that because in Missouri, 96% of large employers still offer health insurance. But for small businesses, it's exactly what you're saying, that it is difficult. You see price increases year after year and the cost of insurance because that insurance company is rating you on those six employees. And so we see only about 43% of small businesses in Missouri that still offer health insurance. And the exchange is meant for small businesses and individuals because what it does is, much like a large employer has a huge pool of employees that spread the risk, when you go in as that six-person employer, then you are put in with a pool and it spreads the risk among a large pool of people in the exchange. So it's almost like mirroring the advantages that a large employer has within the exchange.
The way it's set up now, if you have one of six employees as a diabetic, that group insurance is going to be astronomical probably. But if you have 1,000 employees and some of them are sick, it's diluted in terms of the cost. Before I take my next break, is it possible that the insurer, is there any restriction against insurance companies once these exchanges are set up, really kicking those prices upstairs and gouging customers?
Yes, for insurers who increase their rates 10% or more in a year, they must justify those rate increases, make that information available online so we can all see it. Missouri is one of three states that does not have effective rate review legislation. So our review is done by the federal government, by the Secretary of HHS. She cannot deny the rate increase. She can simply declare that it's unjustified and people shopping in the exchange will be able to see that information. There's also authority for the exchange to exclude from the exchange insurers who have a history of unjustified rate increases. So that's one interesting issue about who makes those decisions. In a federal exchange, it will be the federal government. If we move forward with a state exchange, it would be the state exchange.
And insurance companies, Ryan, are required to spend, 80% of every dollar they take in on health care?
Exactly what I was just going to say. We have a new regulation that actually kicked in 2011, and it's called the medical loss ratio, the MLR. And it requires that in the large group insurance market, that insurers spend at least 85% of the premiums they collect on providing medical care, and they get 15% for overhead costs. In the small group market, they have to spend 80% and they get 20% for overhead costs. And that really, as a foundation, we have about 45 employees, and we got a refund check this year because of that MLR. And so I think, as our caller was talking about with six employees, that also is probably some of that price increase as they're trying to get as much as they can while they still can. And that MLR will affect every insurance in the exchange.
Yeah, and let me say 600,000 Missourians got rebate checks this year or a reduction in their premiums because of those new rules.
Well, that is Sidney Watson of St. Louis University's Health Law Policy Center. Also with me is Ryan Barker, Director of Health Policy for the Missouri Foundation for Health. We're talking about those insurance exchanges being established, in some cases not being established, but being established overall generally through the Affordable Care Act. Missouri, as you probably know, with Proposition E having been passed in this last election, has decided it's not going to establish a state-run exchange, but the feds are going to come in and establish one anyway. We'll continue this conversation in just a moment. Again, I want to encourage your calls. I'll ask Monroe, who has been waiting, to stay with us. I have to take this break. We'll come back and take your call, Monroe. 382-8255 is the number. That's 382-TALK. You can also send us an email at talk@stlpublicradio.org. We'll take a tweet at STL on air, or you can reach us through Facebook. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again, and welcome back to our conversation about those health care exchanges that are being established under the Affordable Care Act. I promised Monroe in St. Louis I'd go right to him when we came back, so let's go to Monroe. You're on the air.
Hello, Don.
Hi.
Thank you for taking my call. I have an observation, and I think I'll turn it into a question. My observation is that it always amazes me how the Republican Party has been able to convince so many people to vote against their own interest. then my observation and the question is, with the Affordable Care Act, will the stipulations that don't allow negotiation of drug prices, is there anything in there that reverses that? Because I think that's where there stands to be a lot of cost savings, because if our government can't negotiate drug prices, it makes that takes away the whole free market situation.
Okay, Monroe, thanks for the call. Ryan, do you want to take that?
Sure. So when the president was first saying that he wanted to do health reform, there were some he brought in some different constituencies, one of which was the drug companies, because looking back at under Clinton, when we tried to do health reform, pharma, hospitals, some of them sank health reform back in the 90s. And so he sort of took them off the table. And so there were some deals cut, and one of them was with pharma. They put some money on the table and said, you know, we'll take this much of a hit, but don't mess with certain things. And one of them was negotiating drug prices. So that is not part of the Affordable Care Act. I think it's something that, you know, needs to be visited, because most countries in the world do have their governments negotiate drug prices for programs like Medicare and Medicaid. But that is not part of the Affordable Care Act.
Yeah, and Ryan is talking about the provisions for Medicare drugs. There are some provisions that cut drug prices for states in the Medicaid program, and we're going to see some savings from those. But it doesn't really address this issue of ongoing negotiation over price.
Sydney, Ryan made another point I'll ask you to address, saying that this issue has not been visited yet. It makes me think that what is likely to happen with that this, what we're talking about, all of what we're talking about now is the first step leading someplace else.
One hopes that that is where we are. The Affordable Care Act begins a process of creating options for people who do not have employer-sponsored health insurance. Like any big piece of legislation, whether we're talking the Social Security Act in 1935 or Medicare when it was first passed in 65, we'll start implementing it. We'll see which pieces work best, which pieces need to be improved, and we'll be in an ongoing public dialogue. And I'm sure we will see pieces of legislation moving through Congress to nip and tuck and improve it.
Will we get to a single-payer universal health care situation, Ryan?
I don't know if we'll get there, but I think we can look at Massachusetts and what's going on there, because really the Obamacare was modeled after what happened in Massachusetts. And if we look at that state, their theme in doing health reform in 2006 was, let's get everybody, most people, to have insurance. And they've got their uninsured rate down below 2%. And now they're saying, okay, now we have to go back and start addressing health care costs. And that's what their state legislature is dealing with right now. And I think that's where we are with on the federal level, is that the Affordable Care Act brings most Americans into health insurance. But we will have to go back and deal with health care costs. This was step one. A lot of people don't want to hear that this was just the first step. But we will come back and deal with costs. And I think drug negotiation may be part of that.
Back to the phones. John is calling us from Clancarbon. He is in his car. John, I hope it's a hands-free phone.
Well, I'm stopping.
Good for you.
Okay. Thanks for taking the call. Speaking of costs, one of the issues that seems to be rearing its ugly head, if you will, is, as far as costs are concerned, is the integration, consolidation of the providers, the large medical facilities, buying more physicians, buying more facilities, and then using this market power to extract more money from the insurance companies. Does the exchange process have any way of helping to control the way the market is working?
Thanks, John.
Well, the exchanges are designed to improve the competition on the health insurance side. Your question really goes to a double whammy problem we've seen in this country, where we've gone from, maybe 50 health insurers to five or six big ones, so that in most locations in the country, we have one or two big health insurers. They control the market, and we've seen health insurance premium prices go up as a result of it. So that's what the exchanges are going to try to do, create some more competition so we drive down those premium prices. John's question goes to the other part of the double whammy. What happens when you have one great big hospital that won't negotiate over prices? And no, the exchanges doesn't deal with that. We're going to have to work on that issue from that end, and that's where a lot of antitrust regulation is going these days.
There are some things in the Affordable Care Act, not the insurance exchanges, but there are some provisions that do impact the delivery of healthcare and the way we pay for that. So there's quite a bit of movement away from the fee-for-service system where hospitals just provide a service and they get paid for every service they provide. And we're moving more towards rewarding quality care and paying for quality, and paying for outcomes. And I think that gets at the caller's question is one of the ways that we start reforming the delivery system. But we are seeing movements towards more consolidation in healthcare. And I think some of that is just a reflection of the way the market is moving.
And it's always been the market in rural areas. We doubt that we'll ever have kind of competing hospital systems there. What Ryan's talking about is setting up some systems where we have good, robust competition based upon lower costs and better quality.
We have a caller who couldn't stay. It gets back to what you were talking about, Sydney, with regard to a few companies doing most of the business. She makes it very specific. Here in Missouri, she says, is it a problem that one company, United Healthcare, holds so many policies in this area?
You know, I think what's good about the exchanges, one of the interesting parts is that right now in Missouri, and I travel all over the state talking about the Affordable Care Act, we have areas in Missouri where there is one health insurance provider in that area. That's not competition. And the interesting thing about the exchanges is if an insurance company wants to participate in the exchange, and as I said earlier, they do because it's a lot of new customers, they have to offer statewide coverage. And so I think in the St. Louis market, we already have quite a few different insurance companies competing. But in some of our more rural areas, the exchange will bring competition to the more rural areas of Missouri, which is, I think, a good thing.
Yeah, and the exchanges are going to have some new plans. One is a co-op plan, and they're called co-ops because they will be owned by their policyholders. They will be not-for-profits. This is seed money created by the Affordable Care Act to create this new option. The other new option that will be offered through the exchanges are multi-state plans, which will be offered in every county and every state. The plans to be negotiated by the same agency that negotiates plans for federal employees. And at least one of those plans will be a not-for-profit option.
The key to it all is going to have to be, and one of you alluded to it earlier, put it in language that people can understand. Keep it simple because it has the capacity to get very complicated very quickly. Let's go back to the phones and bring in Mo, who's also been patient and patiently waiting. Go ahead, Mo.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a small business owner of 9 full-time employees, and I did a little research before the Affordable Health Care Act to see if I was in support of it or not, and actually I have been waiting for a long time for these exchanges. What I have seen in the first 10 years that I provided health insurance, or that our business did for employees. 4 years ago, as I was doing research, I took my portobello sandwich, and 10 years before that, it was $5.75 on the menu. Now, if I had taken the percentage of increases in 10 years that I saw in the health insurance rates, and applied that to my $5.75 sandwich, 10 years later, it would be on the menu for $26.85. So, one time in 10 years, in the first 10 years that we provided health insurance, we saw a single-digit increase, and we were celebrating only a 9% increase. So in 10 years, I saw anything from 9% to 33% increase from year to year in our premiums. Obviously, I've been begging for a pool to get into, and they're not up till now. And let me assure you, with as little time as a business owner has to try to do the research, I found nothing.
All right, Mo, we appreciate the call and the example you gave us there. Healthcare certainly isn't getting any less expensive, no question about that.
Yeah, and these exchanges are meant for you. I mean, that as you said, you've been waiting for something like this. It's unfortunate that we've seen politics sort of take hold in some of these discussions, because the idea of exchanges was a very conservative idea back in the 90s and early 2000s. There was even some legislation introduced in Missouri in 2005 that would have created a sort of a similar type insurance exchange here, and it was sponsored and sort of brought up by the Republicans in our House. So it's unfortunate that this has been politicized. But you're right. This is meant for small business owners like you with 10 or fewer employees.
And, Mo, you're one of those 45% of Missouri small businesses that's trying to offer health insurance to its employees, and I hope you got the benefits from the new tax credits.
Why has that portobello mushroom sandwich gone from $6 to $27? In other words, why have health care costs risen so dramatically? What exactly is making that happen?
Remember, these are not health care costs. These are health insurance premiums. And we know some of it does have to do with rising health costs, but it's also the fallout from this consolidation in the health insurance market, which has fueled some of the increases.
And we've seen in the 90s, and this is where the Missouri Foundation for Health came from, we've seen a lot of insurance companies switch from being nonprofit to being for profit, and that's where the foundation came from. Was when Blue Cross Blue Shield converted, they couldn't take their assets with them, and it created us. But at the same time, when you become for profit, now you have stakeholders that are shareholders that you're responsible to keeping happy. And so a lot of these increases go towards profit. And before we had some of these rules in the Affordable Care Act, we saw insurance companies that were spending 40% of the premiums they were collecting on overhead, and that includes profit. So that is where some of these cost increases are coming from.
And that's going to change under ACA. Time for one more quick call from Min in Webster Groves, but it'll have to be fast, Min. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Liz. I wanted to say that I think the problem with Prop E was that it was a constitutional not something lesser, and that's why people were reluctant.
That we're having a problem. She's saying that Proposition E was a constitutional amendment. That was not the case. There was only one constitutional amendment on the ballot, Amendment 3, I believe. In the 2 minutes we have left, again, going back to the earlier part of our conversation, and Sydney, you brought this up, that people are going to be able to do this shopping on the Internet. It's great, except a lot of people don't use the Internet.
Right. The Internet won't be the only way to shop through an exchange. There will also be telephone access, individuals, there'll be storefronts, and an important piece of them will be navigators, people you can call and get information from and talk through the process.
That sounds like it's going to make it a lot easier, Ryan.
Yes. I mean, we are looking at that idea of patient navigators right now of there may be people entering the insurance market that have never had health insurance in their life, and understanding their options and what is the best plan for them, they're going to need somebody to help them through that process. And so we're glad to see that that's part of this, and the foundation is paying attention to how that will all play out, because we think it's really important.
And I hope we're back here come fall of next year to talk about these navigators and to talk about these choices and help give people information on what's newly available to them.
We just have a minute left. Is it a good idea to suggest to people listening that they be patient? Because as it turns out, those parts of the Affordable Care Act which have been implemented have proved to be very popular.
Absolutely. Yeah. These rebates we've been talking about, the coverage for young adults up to age 25 on their parents' plans. Yes.
So hang in there, Ryan,
right?
That's
right. I mean, I think partly some people are frustrated because it's taken so long, but these are pretty complicated to set up. So I think we'll see people liking the idea of exchanges a lot more once they're a reality.
Okay, well, they soon will be. A final thought in 10 seconds? I guess we don't have time for a final thought. We'll have to wait for our next get-together in the fall when we revisit this situation. Professor Watson, thank you so much for being with us. Great to see you again. And Ryan Barker, thank you for being with us.
Thank you.
Sure appreciate your giving us the benefit of your expertise on this very complicated subject. Tomorrow on St. Louis on the Air, we'll check in with the Beacon's D.C. correspondent, Rob Koenig. A lot going on in Washington these days, and a lot of it has to do with health care, too. Then we'll take a look at the growing disparity in income between low, middle, and upper-income people in Missouri and hear about the experiences of those who took the Food Stamp Challenge. Archived versions of past St. Louis on the Air programs are available for download or podcast at stlpublicradio.org. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you so much for listening. I'm Don Marsh.